Welcome to episode 3 in this series of the Harrods True Tales of Luxury podcast. Now, if you've listened to the previous 2 episodes, then you'll know that I'm talking to you from our beautiful tea rooms here at Harrods. However, whereas those first 2 episodes were recorded early this year before lockdown began, and when hugs and kisses were practically a requirement between us girls, we are now living in different times. I just want to assure you that this and subsequent recordings have been made with all government advice taken very seriously indeed. So sadly, no hugs and kisses, but the show must go on. So with that in mind, any moment now, I'm going to be joined from a safe distance by my good friends, Stacey Duguid and Katie Service. And once again, we'll be casting our discerning eyes over some of the marvellous goods that inhabit this extraordinary store. And if that wasn't enough, we also have a very special guest dropping by towards the end of the episode in the form of Dr. Mariam Zamani. Celebrity go-to and Vogue favourite, she is a virtuoso of vitality when it comes to skincare and is here to tell us what we need to do to fool everyone into thinking we've discovered the fountain of youth. Which, by the way, you can actually find at the wellness clinic on floor 4. So without further delay, let's join Katie and Stacey. Good afternoon, girls.
Good afternoon.
So nice to see you again.
So nice to be 2 meters away from you, Tiffany.
It's lovely to be back in the Terracotta Palace as well.
In the world of luxury. Oh,
can I just say one thing? I just will not ever miss is the fashion double kiss on the cheek. I'm not going to miss it. I find it so awkward.
Do you?
So yeah. You're pleased not to be kissing people.
I'm pleased. I'm happy.
She's Scottish. Now. I hope you've both brought along something extraordinary, interesting, luxurious, and inspiring.
Mine is so interesting. I have detailed notes to read from.
Oh, goodness me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go on then, Katie. I can see a white lacquer box on the table, cylindrical, about the size of 2 fists.
It's very clinical looking, isn't it?
It is clinical looking, yeah.
Or space agey. I can't, it's quite futuristic.
It looks like it could hold a piece of jewellery.
Wrong. Want to take a guess, Stacey?
It looks like... Do you remember E.T.? It looks like the thing E.T. was in when he was... When he landed on Earth. What is it?
Sort of like a little sort of space-age coffin or something.
Like a miniature sunbed.
Right. Well,
it's a miniature sunbed. Come on. For your hands, Gracie Lander.
If I prize it open for you... It's actually much easier than I thought it was going to be.
Oh, my gosh. It's a poker set.
It's coffee pods.
It does look like both of those things. So I suppose just to describe it, when you open it, you'd see a row of, I believe there are 30 little thin discs lined up next to each other. And they're black and grey. And yeah, they do look like coffee pods, don't they? But they are in fact...
Or After 8 mints.
They do.
They're so thin. I can't imagine what you do with those. Come on, what is it?
Okay, so inside each sachet is a dose of skincare, a night cream.
Oh, hang on, isn't that a bit bad for the environment?
Well, funny you should say that, but what I'm presenting to you is a brand called Noble Panacea, and it's one of the most sustainable and green throughout its entire process brands that you will find on the market.
Jodie Comer's brand.
Indeed. Recently made headlines because they announced Jodie Comer as their ambassador.
Yeah.
Actress and general cool person.
Can I just say, I think Noble Panacea is the most fantastic name for a brand, don't you think?
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's fabulous. And do you know why it's called that?
No.
So Noble, because obviously the scientist who founded it and who founded the science within it, the technology within it, won a Nobel laureate in chemistry.
Okay.
For this particular technology that he created inside it. And this is where I pull out my notes.
And when did he win that?
He won it in 2016.
So he won it for this technology?
Exactly. So it's called Organic Molecular Vessel, is the thing that he invented. And it actually sounds like a mouthful, but it's quite easy to understand. It's a little sphere, like a disc, that like a round zorb, I suppose. And it's a vehicle, like a taxi, for the skincare ingredients. And it takes the ingredients safely into your skin to all the right places. and then allows them to be released in exactly the right dosage.
So that's really interesting, because the jury has actually always been out about how absorbent your skin is for the ingredients you're putting in.
And not just that, but a lot of the ingredients, so you might read a skincare bottle and it'll say it has a certain concentration or type of ingredient. But the moment you open that ingredient, that bottle, that jar, and you mix those ingredients with other ingredients, they start to degrade. Mm. And you can actually end up sometimes getting less potent ingredients just because you've had the bottle open for a while, or just because it's mixed with a certain ingredient that slowly decreases.
So that's why it's individual sachets, right?
Exactly.
Is it morning or night?
So this is a nighttime, but they have lots of different ones. And I mean, obviously, just on a kind of practical level.
Can I have a look at one?
Yeah. I'm sliding them down the table to you.
Thank
so it's
you.
A month's supply that you get in one of these little bricks. You tear off the top. Go for it, guys, if you want.
Can we? Yeah. I'm going to go for it.
Oh, awesome.
I'll do it too.
This is the Absolute, it's called, the Night Balm.
Yes.
It smells very clean. It's not perfumed. Yeah.
No, it's not.
I think that's the future of skincare, isn't it? I mean, a lovely sensorial smell is amazing, but I think we're all after kind of like, especially kind of post-lockdown and post-everything, we're after stuff that feels sanitary and clean and like hyper-modern and clinical.
Can I say that actually baths, love baths, and my evening bath, which I pour loads of beautifully fragranced oils into, I then don't want to layer another fragrance on top
totally.
Of that when I put my night cream on.
Yeah. But this is every kind of cruelty-free, paraben-free, SLS-free. It's a very kind of clean formulation. It's a very natural formulation. And all the kind of extraction methods for all the ingredients are kind of thoroughly green and clean the whole way throughout. It's kind of the future of beauty, I think.
Is this an American brand?
It is, yeah. And we're getting it here. We've got it here, which is very, very exciting. It's a new brand for us. And I think it kind of speaks to everything that we're, you know, doing in beauty at Harrods at the moment. You know, we're thinking about the future, we're thinking about clean and sustainable and amazing things like that. But we also want stuff that really works.
Well, game-changing technology, right? Because it's a transporter device.
It's a transporter, but it also makes your ingredients work better.
Yeah.
So, Katie, this is exclusive to Harrods.
This is exclusive to Harrods. And you're looking at a month's supply, so 30 of these little pods for around £250.
Thank you, Katie. I'm just going to slip these into my handbag. Is that okay?
No, they're mine.
Actually, they're mine.
Now, can I go next, please, Stacey?
Absolutely.
Now, on the table here, we have...
Don't know why I'm giggling. It's your face.
Can I just describe what's happening here? There's a sort of Harrods bag draped over
but
a mystery
she's also
object.
Looking really smug.
I am looking smug because the thing is, I wanted to tell you about this, but then I started researching it and I realised that it was actually even more interesting and fabulous than I realised. So I am going to reveal, like a magician, I'm going to pull back the bag and reveal in this wooden tray that I have here. Ta-da!
Oh my gosh.
What do you see?
Oh, I know what they are.
So do I.
Go on then.
The red gives it away. They are baccarat?
Surely.
Nope.
Oh.
What?
But you're right. It's crystal.
And are they chandelier pendants?
Yes.
Yes.
Good. They're chandelier pendants. And they are actually from a brand called St. Louis. And they are from one of my favourite places in Harrods on the third floor, the Alley of Delights, as I call it. We have, would you believe it, a chandelier bar.
Stop.
Where you can go and design your own chandelier.
My goodness.
Yeah.
I'm actually speechless. That's amazing.
Between the sconces and the pendants and the hurricane lamps and the crystal bras, if you like, that hold it all together, there are a possible 15,000 combinations of designing your own chandelier. So you can have a truly unique...
Can I tell you for a minute, I thought they were Alexander Rich earrings.
You are so fashion. Actually, you know, why not? Look, these are just
Are they heavy?
They are quite heavy. Yeah, try
it. Okay, so they are, what are they? Sort of 5 centimetres long. Maybe one is 3 centimetres. There's a little dot above it, a little small, kind of maybe a button-sized crystal at the top. Multicoloured, so we've got a light blue, a deep red, a black, a clear and a yellow. They're gorgeous colours. So you just mishmash them together or you... Coordinate them. Is there a chandelier stylist? Do we have a stylist here?
Yes, we do have very special people from the brand St. Louis, which I'm now going to reveal to you is actually owned by the sine qua non of luxury, Hermès. So Hermès bought St. Louis back in 1995, but St. Louis actually started in the 1586, which is the 16th century.
Oh, my God.
Let me just tell you a little bit about how it started. So there is a forest on the borders of France and Germany called Vosges. And apparently this forest is kind of threaded with myths and legends. And even now, actually, if you go along to it, it's kind of full of creepy secrets. There's a tree with 2 feet, apparently. And there's another one with gnarled roots that resemble the fingers of a giant witch. It's also very famous for mushroom growing, which probably won't come as a surprise to you. But anyway...
That's a different show altogether.
That's a totally different show. In this forest, it is very rich in natural resources. So there's silica sand, there's potash from ferns, there's beautiful firewood and amazing river water. And so it became a kind of mecca for the travelling itinerant glassmakers of the 15th and 16th century. Anyhow, they came here and started setting up, they all convened here and started setting up glassworks, and St. Louis was born. And then actually it was an Englishman who discovered the kind of game-changer piece of alchemy that could turn glass into crystal. So crystal is a type of glass, and if you use lead oxide, it becomes crystal. And crystal is much more sort of, it's softer, if you like, than glass, and so it's more brilliant and more transparent. So that was why it was such a game changer for chandeliers. So St. Louis, which had been a crystal manufacturer, became the place to go to for chandeliers. And all of the royalty and the nobles of Europe began to commission what's called haute cristallerie. Haute cristallerie from St. Louis in order to make and craft these beautiful chandeliers.
Oh, I feel like I've just watched a movie or something. I was there in the forest with you.
I know, isn't it such a lovely story? And actually, the other bit of it is that you probably know that the other really famous glass manufacturer in Europe in the sort of 20th century or before that was Murano in Venice. And actually, there was a real rivalry going on between the Italian glass of Murano and the French glass of Saint-Louis.
Such different styles.
Yes, but Murano glass is not crystal. So they were specialists in colour, as you know. And then what Saint-Louis did was it was crystal. And actually the way that they make it is an extraordinary craft, which actually is, you know, a real artisan that's handed down through generations and generations. But there's basically a hot furnace room where the raw materials are heated up. The glass is then blown. And of course, if you make a mistake, that's it. It's done. You have to start again. Mm-hmm. And then once it's blown and molded into shape, it then goes into the out of the foundry and into the cold room where it is engraved and cut and polished. And then it's up to you to commission your chandelier and all the different bits and how you want it made.
I've actually seen a run of crystal flacons being made for a perfume brand that we have here called Elegantis. I went to France to their one of the oldest crystal factories in France. And it is amazing to see how much they have to throw away because they won't do anything but perfection, these companies. So even if it has a tiny flaw, this beautiful crystal bottle just gets chucked in the bin. It's amazing. And they melt it all down and then make it all again.
I know. And if you think about what goes into each piece,
yeah,
how that has been crafted, how it has been blown, how it's been cut, how it has been engraved, you realise that every single piece on it is entirely original because it's all made by hand. Mm-hmm. And it's made by these people who for generations have been honing this craft and passing it down. I absolutely love this.
You can really see the value in it then, can't you?
So, girls, fancy a chandelier?
Yes, please. I'll take the red.
Now, Stacey, reveal to us.
So I'm about to reveal a hugely disappointing object, which I can't wait to describe your faces when I pull it out of its box. And there's a reason that it looks so boring, but it's actually very exciting.
Oh, no, I love that.
It's a man's shoe. This is a company called George Cleverly. And in July in Harrods, we are having a very special moment with this company. They will do a complete made-to-measure from beginning to end service. And George Cleverly was born in 1898, and he served in the First World War. He's from quite a humble background.
He was brought up in Colchester in Essex, and he spent his childhood selling boots and shoe polish. And then he went to the First World War. I mean, can you imagine sort of learning this craft and this trade and then ending up as quite a young man in the First World War, and eventually ended up in France, where he ended up working in a boot factory making boots for the army. Anyway,
that's a long way from that beautiful...
Well, it's all part of his journey, and I think his journey is so important because actually the craft and the skill that has gone into this shoe is the craft and the skill that he learned when he was 15, but he has passed to his contemporaries who have now overtaken the store.
Can I just describe it a little
bit? Yes, you go.
Yeah, so it does... I mean, I could see why you said it was boring, but it's not. It's actually a beautiful piece of simple design because it's a single piece of leather over the top of the sole. It's actually a very gorgeous chocolatey brown leather, but there's no seam in it at all, is there?
No, there's no seam at all.
And it's beautiful the way that Yes, can I have it?
Socially distanced. Past it.
It's quite heavy, which you would want in a brogue like this. Is it a brogue? Can I call it a brogue or is it a loafer?
It's an Oxford, I think.
Oxford brogue.
You see, now I'm talking about things I don't know about. You see, I'm well out of my comfort zone talking about men's shoes. But I love the craftsmanship that's gone into it. It takes 5 shoemakers to make this one shoe made to measure.
Smells amazing. I know you're not meant to smell shoes, but really.
And you don't put it on the table.
You're not supposed to put it on the table.
Don't put it on the table. So after the war, he joined a little company, a London shoemaker.
Can I just ask, why shouldn't I put this shoe on
the
table?
It's bad luck.
Didn't know that, but only new shoes. Luck. You can put new old shoes on the table.
I'm now hugging the shoe on my lap.
I didn't put it on the table, girls.
She didn't. I think the last 9 weeks, we've had enough of bad luck. Let's move on.
It looks like it's been moulded for the most beautiful foot as well. You know how new shoes just feel quite like they've never seen a foot before? The kind of lines on that. It's so soft looking, the leather. It looks like it would hug the foot.
Is it a man's shoe or is it just not anybody's shoe?
Well, I'm going to say, I have a long list of celebrities that he's made shoes for, which was going to blow your mind in a minute. But he had 5 shoemakers and he has 5 people, the same 5 people working on one shoe. So if you go to him and say you're going to be a customer for the next 30 years, very funny. I watched a video actually. And in it, the current owner, Mr. Glasgow, he worked with George Cleverly for 20 years, and then George passed his business to him. And in it, he really, this wheezy little laugh, he goes, well, you know, these shoes, as one customer said, they lasted longer than his 3 marriages. 30 years, 3 marriages.
I love that. They are the kind of shoes you would buy them and you would keep them for your whole life.
I know that there are a lot of sort of younger people who love trend, but there's a real return to the heritage of a brand and the storytelling of a brand. And I love the process of this, which I'm just going to quickly talk through now. So the fitting, so you have your, and they measure every little part of you.
Oh, it's bespoke.
It's bespoke.
Oh.
It's made to measure. Beginning part of it is the fitting. And I love it here. It says here, this is really unsexy. The measuring of the client's foot, the noting of peculiarities in the foot, and the transposing of measures, basically, tick corns, tick broken toes. Sticky out bones, you know. Tick, tick, tick. So then there's a little trace. He measures the foot, no 2 feet. Your left foot is not the same size as your right foot. Of course, we all know that because, you know, that pesky little half size on your left foot that makes you end up wearing an insole in one shoe. So the process is every little inch of your foot is measured and then a wooden last is made. And so romantic because that is your last and it has your name on. And George Cleverly in the archive, actually in his studio in Mayfair, he has all of the lasts from all of his famous customers, from everyone actually. And it makes such an amazing visual. So that's the first process, is to make this last. And then it's passed on. So then from the wooden last, somebody then makes a paper pattern, so over the foot. And then from there, it's sent to the cutter. The cutter takes the paper pattern and cuts out the pieces of leather. And from there, from the cutter, it goes to the closer for sewing and stitching, and then the marker who puts in the toe and the heel. And these 5 people who make your shoe, if they have more people in the studio, if you have one pair of shoes made, you will only have your shoes made by those 5 people. Because in handmade, this is not AI, anything that's handmade, there's all these little peculiarities that people have, their ways of stitching or their ways of putting things together. I think it's such a romantic story. And now we're going to talk about the celebrity list, which is so long. It's brilliant. It's everyone from Sir Winston Churchill to Twiggy to Brian Ferry to Sir Elton John, Tom Wolfe, Viscount Linley.
So Twiggy, he made them for women.
Yes,
well.
He made them for women.
I mean, the worlds of menswear and womenswear are getting very close now, aren't they? And always overlapping. And actually, I'm so glad that you brought that shoe along, because in my prowling for what my first purchase is going to be when the store opens next week, I was looking at brogues. And we had a big loafer moment at the shows back in February. Do you remember? Like, lots of people wearing loafers. What I want to buy now is really high quality stuff that is going to last me until the day that I die. And actually, I want a pair of brogues. And now you've inspired me to go to George Cleverly.
You will always have them mended, fixed. They will professionally polish them. There are like three pages of... there's reams of information on how to polish your shoes, which should be done every 6 weeks, by the way.
Okay, so now I've got beautiful skin with the best ingredients in the world transported straight into my cells. I know what my next investment buy is going to be, and it's going to be for my peculiar feet. And I have a house goal, which is to design my own chandelier from the same artisans that designed chandeliers back in the 16th century. Girls, you have outdone yourselves. Thank you very much indeed.
Our guest for this episode is oculoplastic surgeon and skincare guru, Dr. Mariam Zimani. With 12 years of practice and fellowships at two of London's top hospitals, Dr. Zimani is also the creator and founder of MZ Skin, a clean, high-performance, scientific skincare range for timeless, youthful skin.
So, Dr. Zimani, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Actually, can I call you Mariam?
Of course. Please don't call me doctor. I didn't even realize you said that initially. I normally correct people.
Now, tell us about the doctor bit, because I actually had to look up what an oculoplastic surgeon is.
So oculoplastic means I do plastic and reconstructive surgery around the eye. Oculo is eye. So basically, I trained as an ophthalmologist, which is an eye surgeon. And then I did a few fellowships after that, which really focused on reconstructive and cosmetic surgery around the face and particularly the eyes. So most of my surgery is upper and lower eyelid surgery. Mainly blepharoplasties, lumps and bumps, and some reconstructions from cancer removals. And then I do all the non-surgical stuff, too, in terms of the aesthetics. So I do lasers, peels, injectables, other treatment modalities. And it's just really fun to be able to mix everything together. So I kind of fuse the surgical with the non-surgical.
Well, I have to say, one of the reasons why we invited you on this podcast was because of your own podcast,
which you host
with Vogue editor Fiona Golfer. And I have to say, it's called The Guinea Pig, and it is an absolute last word in everything to do with facial aesthetics and plastic surgery and things that you can do for yourself. And I've learned so much from listening.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy you enjoy it. It's fun making it.
Now, tell me first up, how did you get into it? Were you always going to be a doctor?
So no, actually, I was going to be working for Model United Nations. I mean, like, I wanted to work for the new UN. I was always doing Model UN and when I was younger. And
you grew up in America, right?
I grew up in America. So I grew up in Maryland, and then I went to school in D.C. I was at Georgetown. And then I did my training at GW, which is still in D.C., and I even started private practice there. And then I moved to the UK because of my husband. And I did a few more fellowships here. And then, you know, I always think things happen for a reason. I feel like my path happened because of a number of different reasons. And one of them was the fact that I moved to the UK. So I think that my professional career would have been very different had I been in the States. Equally as, you know, happy, I would have been as happy, but I think it would have definitely had a different take. But I always wanted to be a surgeon when I went to medical school. So I always knew I wanted to be really good at one thing. So that was where I felt that was my focus. So I didn't want to be a jack of all trades. I really wanted to be specific. And I just loved everything that was surgical. I thought about being a full plastic surgeon, but it's also very time consuming. And my hours were already crazy, so in residency. And so I just didn't want to have, like, 8 years of my prime life, you know, from 25, you know, to 35, probably after fellowship.
Training.
I still did training, but I had more normal hours as opposed to a plastic surgeon who has, you know, a lot of times you have to do general surgery. So you're there at 5 o'clock in the morning and you're there at midnight. And, you know, I always knew I wanted to have a family and children. And I think, I look at people who have it all, do it all, and I admire them. I didn't think that was the best decision for me. And my friend was like, oh, you really should look at the eyes. You know, I think you're really going to like it. And I was like, oh, my God, how gross is what I started with. And then afterwards I did, I was like, oh, my God, I love it. This is so fun. And so that's how I became an oculoplastic surgeon.
So, Mariam, the question that I always am really intrigued by with facial aesthetic doctors is how you distinguish between patients where there's been some kind of trauma or accident or something where there's a sort of, dare I say it, medical need for intervention. And then your common or garden patient like myself who just wants to make themselves look a bit better. Do you distinguish between those two types?
No, I think everybody wants to look their best and feel their best. So, of course, the person who's had any trauma or has had some sort of cancer or whatever the reason is for their need for having a treatment done, it's the same overall reason, you know, they want to look better and then also feel better. And so, of course, they're more forgiving with a scar or a slight imperfection, whereas someone who's purely cosmetic, you know, looks at every fine detail and is a little bit more specific and can be, I hate to use the word fussy because that's like, that makes them sound, you know, like a difficult patient, and they're not. It's just, they're striving more for perfection, whereas somebody who's had an issue before is looking for an improvement. And I think that distinction, you know, they're always very grateful. And then there are, of course, in what I do, there's always people who are not going to be as happy as you would like them to be, even if they had a very excellent outcome.
We are never happy. We always
want more. Human. Yeah, this is true.
And on that, actually, I have to ask you, treatment or tweakment?
I like both. So I do a lot of tweakment. So I do, tweakment. I think I like tweakment only because I think it gives you the connotation that you're doing a small amount. And you can do it either frequently or infrequently, but the idea is that you're doing something that doesn't necessarily change you, it just improves what you already have. So it's not something, the goal of what I do is not to make you a different person, it's to make you a better version of yourself. And so I always say it's not going to necessarily shave years off of your life. It's just going to make you look the best version of yourself. And so that's what I think is important when you go to someone like me.
So on that, what do you think are the treatments that really deliver the most effective?
I think, first of all, I think skincare is really important because I do think that everything starts at home. So it's kind of like having a trainer. If you have a trainer, that's great once a week, but then you have to maintain it. It's not like you can have muscles or definition with just one treatment. So I think it's really important to have good habits at home. So obviously lifestyle is really important. Having good skincare is important. Sleep, stress, all of those things are important.
Don't tell me to drink lots of water. That's such a cop out.
Yeah, no. But it is important to be hydrated. It doesn't have to necessarily be water. I mean, you can have, you know, nice little teas all day long, or, you know, you can make up juices or even coffee. You know, having a coffee or two a day is not the end of the world. It's just, it's good to be hydrated just for, you know, skin hydration too, in addition to other things. But I think in terms of what you can do in the office, I think it's very arbitrary. And I think it's very different depending on what the issue is. So if you are somebody who is more rosacea prone or has redness to their skin, there are different treatments, like, you know, perhaps having some laser treatments to help with the flushing might help. Whereas if you're somebody who's very pigmented and has pigmentation from sun, you know, there's a number of treatments that can help with that. Or you're someone who has melasma, which is like a pregnancy mass, that there, then again, that's something different. If you have heavy eyelids, that's a surgical treatment, you know. So I don't think there's any one treatment or tweakment that is best for everybody. I really think, is it the eyes? Is it the jaw? Is it the nose? Is it the lips? You know, it's kind of everything in unison. But I always ask people, when they come in, what's the thing that bothers you the most? So when you look in the mirror, we all have something that we're insecure about, or we, you know, kind of annoys us every once in a while to very frequently. And I always say the thing we should always work on for you is the thing that bothers you. So if it's people come in and they say, you know what, I look really tired, then I figure out how to make them look less tired. Is that because they have dark circles under their eyes? Is that because part of their midface has sagged a little bit or dropped? Or is it because the eyebrows have come down? Is it because they have lots of pigmentation that is making them, you know, look heavier or shadowed in certain areas? So really is dependent on what you present with.
So I'm going to make a confession here, which yes. is I was a natural girl until I got to a certain age. And then I was like, I need to do something about this. So I started courses of Botox, which for me were a complete game changer. Like they made such a difference, I felt, to the way that I looked, but my husband never noticed, which was the brilliant thing.
Funny Obviously. How that is, by the way. Husbands notice very little. They say, oh my God, I'm going to kill you if you do this, and then they never notice. But anyway.
I know, it's great. But during lockdown, I obviously haven't been able to keep up the maintenance. And so I've gone back to the face that I actually have, which is,
yes.
I think a lot of people have experienced this, right, Katie?
Absolutely.
And my first reaction was, I can't wait to see my doctor to get this back to normal. And then actually now I've lived with it for a bit and I'm sort of thinking, do I want to have Botox in my forehead again? So what I'd like to know from you is what are our alternatives now if we don't want to go back to botulinum toxin?
Yeah, you don't have to. I mean, you can do things and have breaks. You know, there may be a time right now. We are also a little bit more rested because we're at home. We have the convenience of being not having the commute. We're hopefully eating a little bit better because you're not grabbing things on the run, mainly because you can't grab anything on the run, and you're not on the run anymore in that sort of way. So I think part of that is because we've had to slow down. And I think for that reason, lockdown has been amazing.
Skin care has developed so much in the last few years, hasn't it? I mean, you've been
Absolutely.
I mean, amazing formulas have been put together, and actually your range is one of the very tippity top of that. And actually, we're very proud because you launched your range.
We did. I was walking through today and I said, this is the second time I'm so excited to walk through. The first time was my little Cinderella moment, not knowing how far away your staff entrance is from actually the beauty hall. I was in heels bringing all of my products to put on my newly minted MZ
Darling,
skin.
Darling, we're all in heels all the time. Don't worry.
Okay, but I'm not normally. So, you know, I did this all for a special occasion. I was like, oh my God. By the time I got there, but it felt like a real Cinderella moment. And this was the second one because I feel, you know, there's pre-COVID and post-COVID, and it's very exciting to feel the beginning of post-COVID.
Yeah, we are very excited to be back. Now, the one that I've got here in my hand, and I just want you to talk me through this because it's got the most intriguing label. This is your Rest and Revive yes. Night Serum.
Yes.
And in it is restorative placenta and stem cell
Absolutely.
Ingredients.
Absolutely, yes. So I believe I created the skincare to be made by a woman for women and by a woman doctor. There's a lot of really great skincare out there, very few female-led doctor brands. And especially when I started, now there's a few more, and I'm really proud to be one of them. And the idea was that you don't need a lot of different products together. You need a few that work synergistically well with each other. And the best routine that you have is the one that you're consistent with. So it doesn't matter if it's 3 steps or 5 steps, but there are 3 major steps you need to have. You need to reveal your skin, which is to cleanse and wash and exfoliate it. You need to enhance it. So you need to have products and ingredients like stem cells, like placenta, like retinol, like hyaluronic acid, vitamin C, antioxidants. I mean, the list is really quite long, depending on what your concerns are. And you need to protect your skin with SPF and other antioxidants and topical ingredients. So you can be as simple as 3 ingredients, or you can make it, you know, an elaborate multiple-step program. I am somebody who's loved skincare my whole life, and I remember my mother gave me a Lancôme, I'll never forget, a Lancôme, almost like a BB cream now, a tinted moisturizer when I was like 14 or 15, and that's when it all started for me. And then I graduated to the Shiseido's and the Natura Ibiza, and then I went to the Dr. Brands, and I felt that they were very medicinal. And I really wanted to keep that luxury sensory component. So for me,
beautiful that's, packaging, by
that's
the way.
That's why pink and gold.
Rose, pink, and gold.
Thank you. Absolutely gorgeous. Thank you. And I did that on purpose because I loved that ritual. You know, at night I'd come home, take a shower, and the skincare was very important for me. My whatever it was that I was using on my skin, putting on pretty underwear, even if I was putting sweats on top of it. And that was like my routine. When I went to other Dr. Brands, I didn't sense that, even if they were wonderful products, which a lot of them are. But, you know, I just wanted that fusion. And so this cream in particular, I really believe in the restorative benefits of using stem cells and placenta. So this is something that's
gained. Where are they from?
The stem cells are from plants, but the placenta is from sheep. And no animals are bothered. I mean, we're a cruelty-free brand. It's basically when a baby lamb is born, the placenta, just like in a human, is removed and usually, you know, thrown away unless you're eating it as a human. Some people make pills and stuff, and now we're using them in skincare from the sheep. So I found only one farm in the world, actually, that ethically sources placenta, and so it was very important for me as a brand to be very ethical. And so there's no animal testing and no animals are hurt in this. But I really do believe in the restorative benefits of that. So I use it in my own practice with our own blood when I do PRP, which is platelet-rich plasma, removing the blood, centrifuging it, and taking that PRP and putting it back into the
face. And you talk a lot about that. So you're a strong believer in that as a treatment,
aren't you? I do. I do love that treatment, and I think it's really nice for people in terms of rejuvenating their skin and giving it a boost. And we already know that it has restorative benefits because it's been used since the 60s for joint repairs. So now, you know, we're elaborating and we've done research collectively, not just me, but in, you know, using ingredients from plants and from other animals, and they do have a very restorative effect. So this product, for instance, 100% of people found their skin deeply hydrated after using it. I mean, really, I thought it was going to be the one product that I would have trouble educating people about, and it had a slow pickup, but now it's one of our hero products. I mean, people just keep buying it over and over because they say in their emails it's just like having sleep in a bottle.
So Dr. Dwazamani, I'm going to have to ask you because you do actually look like Angelina Jolie.
Oh, you're so sweet.
What is it that you do? What's your routine?
My routine? So my routine changes quite a lot because I'm trying all the products that hopefully will come out in the next year or two. So I'm a year ahead of everybody else or two. But basically, I use my Cleanse and Clarify every evening. I use it in the evening because I tend to work out in the afternoon and then I take
every
a shower.
Day?
I do. I work out pretty much every day.
So my final question for you is, and we like to ask this of all of our guests at Harrods, what is your top luxury? What feels like luxury to you?
Gosh, my definition of luxury has changed since COVID.
Because it used to be time, right?
Yes. Mm. So I still would say it's time. It's just, you know, the more time I have with my family and my kids and my husband even, the nicer it is. I was joking that, you know, after lockdown there are going to be so many divorces. But actually for us, it's been really cozy.
What do you think the first thing you're going to buy is?
Gosh, everything. No.
Having just walked through the store.
I know. You know, I just can't wait. I haven't worn heels in, I think, 4 months. I think just before lockdown, I stopped. The last time was like March 2nd or something. I'd love to have a really fun party to go to and wear something really colorful and really beautiful. I love dresses, so I'd love to have a reason to buy a dress, one. And two, I think another piece of summer fun.
PPE aside, Dr. Dwazamani must get the best dressed facial aesthetic
sure.
Dr. Prize.
Oh, no, you're so London. Sweet. There's some, that's very kind.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you
it's
so much for having me.
Wonderful talking to you.
It's been fun. Thank you for inviting me.
That's it for this episode of the True Tales of Luxury podcast. A huge thank you to Dr. Marianne Zamani for dropping by to fill us in on the complexities of complexions. And if you'd like to try her MZ skin range, it's available online and in-store in our fabulous beauty hall. You can find episode 4 in your podcast app already, but do subscribe if you'd like to receive more episodes as soon as they become available. As always, thank you so much for listening, and bye-bye for now.